January 23rd. This is the last session on our module for the Lojong practices. And
Module 27.
Module 27. So that's very good. I have some handouts. So it's unlikely that you've read any of the material. Of course. Yeah. And have you had any chance to do you have any texts or have you read any of the resource material?
Remember a little bit of the material we did last week.
Okay. Which we didn't, it was Lojong last, was not last week, though, was it?
Yes,
was
we there, handed was out.
Okay, good.
Went over a few things.
Okay.
And handouts.
I'm going to give a handout. It's not very complicated. There's just sort of some thoughts and information on the front and on the back, or some, we'll read this and just pass it around. The material, and I think we should read something from the book so that you have a sense of what we're working with. Mm-hmm. So, and we've got a couple of texts. So the Lojong is a series of slogans, and they're called slogans because they're actually sort of little pithy reminders of how to approach situations. And I find them, it's like a real manual for how to function, how to bring one's practice and study out into the world. Because you can be the most brilliant practitioner on the cushion and be a total jerk when you get off the cushion. And so the good thing is that with some practice, you begin to have a real sense of when you're really off. So that's good. So it isn't as though you're off and you're a bad person. It's like, oh, there's a different way to look at it. So the baseline of all of this is that you've got everything you need fundamentally to work with all this material and to work with your own mind. And that just as when you're on the cushion and you're following the meditation technique and you go, well, yak, oh, I'm going to just come back to the breath. I'm going to call that thinking and come back to the breath. It isn't like you're going, oh, you stupid idiot, you stopped following the technique. You're not doing that. It's just very gentle, and there's a sort of awareness that you have enough sort of discipline and basic well-being to see where your mind goes off and to bring it, without bias, back to the task that you've given yourself, which in this case is just following the meditation technique. And so I find these Lojong slogans sort of like meditation, that sort of technique quality for everyday life. And as you read them and learn and work with them, they'll pop into your mind when you're doing your thing, right? They'll just, you'll encounter situations and you'll start watching yourself tend one way or another, and then the slogan will come to mind. So that's why it's really good to study them, to have them present, to and not sort of like, you have to, please be gentle. This is not about hammering anything into your being. It's really learning how to work with yourself in the world, being compassionate to yourself and to your world. So the two texts that I was looking at for this class was Trolloc Rinpoche's book called, and it's in this material, The Practice of Lojong, Cultivating Compassion Through Training the Mind. And Chögyam Trungpa, Training the Mind and Cultivating Loving Kindness. So you see we have a theme going here. And the loving kindness actually begins with you being actually practicing. Actually giving yourself the remarkable space to be able to not do anything except work with your mind on the cushion for however long or short a time you can. So that's a very kind thing for you to do to yourself to start. In particular, we're doing number 20, and that one is of the two judges, rely on the principal one. And that's Tralag Rinpoche's way of describing it. And Chögyam Trungpa says, of the two witnesses, hold the principal one. There's certainly one's a judge and one's a witness, so that's kind of fascinating. And that gives you a real heads up as to the language that these guys use. Tralag Rinpoche, I felt a wee bit scolded. And he's brilliant and wonderful, but I have to say, that was my reaction a little bit, where I didn't feel that so much with Chögyam Trungpa, and maybe we'll read a little and toss that around. So let's get right to it. Does anybody... Nobody brought a text, right? Okay, we're going to have to do some reading here. Let's start with this. Let's just read a little so that we're on the same page. Can you read a little bit?
Yes.
At the beginning? Mm-hmm. Can you read from here to there?
Yeah, I can. Okay. Slogan 20, of the two judges, rely on the principal one. We can't inhabit our lives without paying attention to who we are and what we might wish to become. There are two types of opinions that shed light on who we are: the opinions we hold about ourselves and the opinions others hold about us. When we question whether we're making any real progress with our practice, our tendency is to ask others whether they can perceive changes in us. Other people's opinions are very often not the same as our opinion of ourselves. It may be that people fail to see our inner qualities and judge us harshly, or it may be that we are being overly critical of ourselves, while others see us in a very understanding and forgiving light. It is more often the case, however, that we have the more positive opinion of ourselves. While we should not disregard others' perceptions of us entirely, we shouldn't give credence to their perceptions over our own. This is a very complex issue because it depends on many subtle variables. Nagarjuna says that knowing whether someone is really a good, genuine person or not is as difficult as knowing the inside of a mango. We may think someone is wonderful and then find out that he or she is quite mean-spirited, in fact. Other people may seem surly or rough at first, but reveal themselves to be very tender-hearted. In Nagarjuna's words, know that men are like the mango fruit, unripe but appearing ripe, ripe but appearing unripe, unripe and appearing unripe, ripe and appearing ripe.
So, take that. Yeah, yeah.
Wait, pass this along.
Well, yeah, pass that along.
Okay.
Michael, do you want to read a bit?
Mm-hmm.
Right, starting there.
Starting here?
While yeah, start there.
While other people's opinions of us are important, this is not where the true matter lies. So we should rely more on what we think, because only we can really judge ourselves. We still need to follow the Abhidharma recommendations to observe shame in relation to ourselves and decorum in relation to others.
Just want to note the language. Note the language. Shame, which is fascinating. So go on.
The Lojong teachings are not advocating, quote, individualism here, encouraging us to reject other people's opinions as completely irrelevant and assuming we can do whatever we like so long as we are minding our own business. This is a very common attitude these days, but the people who profess to hold it still act as if other people's opinion matters when it suits them. For example, when they want to romance someone or need to attend a court hearing when they are caught breaking the law. At those times, they're quite prepared to conform to all manner of social expectations and proprieties. Rather than promoting this kind of hypocrisy, the Lojong teachings are simply advising us not to regard other people's opinions about us as more important than our own. Pato Limpache extends this warning. Do you want me to continue or stop?
Yes, do read what Pato Limpache said.
You might feel slightly disenchanted with samsara, develop a vague determination to be free of it, and take on the semblance of a serious Dharma student to the point that ordinary folk are quite impressed and want to be your patron and disciples. But at that point, unless you take a very rigorous look at yourself, you could easily start thinking you really are as other people see you. Puffed up with pride, you get completely carried away by appearance and start to think that you can do whatever you want.
I think that's fine for that right now.
Okay.
And perhaps you'll read. Mary Esther, are you up for it? For reading a bit, little bit? I do have traction somewhere. And then you'll read a bit, and then down to about here, and perhaps you'll read well, actually, Mary Esther, why don't you read, we read to about here, and then you can read till the end of the chapter.
Where did I start?
At 20. I'm sorry. Right there.
Okay.
So this was Trilog Rinpoche's introduction to that chapter. And this is another view. Not entirely different, but somewhat.
In any situation, there are two witnesses. Other people's view of you and your own view of yourself. Of those, the principal witness is your own insight. You should not go along with other people's opinion of you. The practice of the slogan is always to be true to yourself. Usually, when you do something, you would like to get some kind of feedback from your world. You have your own opinions of how well you have done, and you also have other people's opinions of how well you have done. Usually, you keep your own opinion of yourself to yourself. First, you have your own opinions about something, and then you begin to branch out and ask somebody else, was that all right? How do you think I'm doing? That is one of the traditional questions that comes up in the meetings between teacher and student. In many cases, people are very impressed by you because you look fit and are cheerful and a great deal, and you seem to know what you are doing. A lot of compliments take place. On the other hand, a lot of criticism could come to you from others who do not properly and fully know what is actually happening within you. This slogan says that of the two witnesses, hold the principal one as the actual, authentic one. That authentic witness is you.
You are the only person who knows yourself. You are the only person who has been with yourself since you were born. And even before that, you carried your own great baggage of karma with you. You decided to enter the womb of somebody or other. You were born into somebody's stomach, and you came out of it, and you still carry your baggage along with you. You feel your own pain and pleasure and everything. You are the one who experienced your infancy, the pain and pleasure of it. You have gone through your teenagehood, the pain and pleasure of it. You are the one experiencing your adulthood, the pain and pleasure of it. You are beginning to experience your middle age years, the pain and pleasure of it. And finally, you will experience getting old and dying, the pain and pleasure of it. You have never been away from yourself even for a minute. You know yourself so well. Therefore, you are the best judge of yourself. You know how naughty you are. You know how you try to be sensible. And you know how you sometimes try to sneak things in. Usually, I is talking to am. Am I to do this? Am I to do something naughty? If I do, nobody will know. Only we know. We could do it, and we might get away with it. There are lots of tricks or projects you and yourself always do together, hoping that nobody will actually find out. If you had to lay the whole thing out in the open, it would be so embarrassing. You would feel so strange. On the other hand, of course, there is the other possibility. You could try to be very good so that somebody would be so impressed with you and with how much effort you put into yourself. You might try to be a good boy or a good girl, but if you have to spell the whole thing out, nobody will actually believe how good you are trying to be. People would think it was only just a joke. Only you really know yourself. You know at every moment. You know the way you do things, the way you brush your teeth, the way you comb your hair, the way you take your shower, the way you put on your clothes, the way you talk to somebody else, the way you eat, even if you are not terribly hungry. During all those things, I and am are still carrying on a conversation about everything else. So there are a lot of unsaid things happening to you all the time. Therefore, the principal witness, or the principal judge, is yourself. The judgment of how you are progressing in your Lojong practice is yours. You know best about yourself, so you should work with yourself constantly. This is based on trusting your intelligence rather than trusting yourself, which could be very selfish. It is trusting your intelligence by knowing who you are and what you are. You know yourself so well, therefore any deception could be cut through. If someone congratulates or compliments you, they may not know your entire existence. So you should come back to your own judgment, to your own sense of your expressions and the tricks you play on others and on yourself. That is not self-centered. It is self-inspired from the point of view of the non-existence of ego. You just witness what you are. You are simply witnessing and evaluating the merit rather than going back over it in a Jungian or Freudian way.
So, thank you.
Thank you all.
So, this is fascinating to me for a number of reasons. One of which is that usually when we enter the path of meditation or we're interested in it, it's because we've gone through some kind of internal challenge or we have questions about what is going on here or what am I doing. It isn't because everything is going swimmingly that we really decide we're going to sit on a cushion and be quiet and follow our breath. There's some impulse and some awareness that something needs to be investigated. And one of the problems is, do we trust ourselves? We trust ourselves enough to recognize that this thing called meditation would be useful or valuable.
You said one of the problems is?
One of the questions is one of the problems is not trusting ourselves. Or do we trust ourselves? One of the issues. And so we have a tendency to want other people to tell us that we're okay, that we're doing it right, that we've got it, that actually it's not so bad. It's okay to want feedback. But what this is all about is even with feedback, ultimately we have to develop the ability to trust our own perceptions. And in a system where there are teachers and gurus, and we're being told that whatever occurs in your mind and your impulses can be based on ego, so one begins to, it's possible to stop trusting oneself very much and to really think that somebody else has the answer of how you should be and who you should be. And why I love this slogan is because it's saying fundamentally, ultimately, even in a system where there's so much surrendering, in a process of surrendering of our yakety-yak and getting to know our habits and getting to know our negative habits or our we know ourselves. We know what we do. Each of us intimately knows our own tricks. But that doesn't mean we're not, that at the same point we're not aware of that. So this slogan is saying, innately, you have wisdom. And you can cloud it up with habitual behavior, but somewhere you know if you're on or if you're not on. Or if you're, and particularly when you start practicing and you start teaching and so on and so forth, people say, oh, you're so fantastic, or you're in theater, oh, you're so incredible, you're such a brilliant artist. You know, whatever, you know, it's endless sort of opportunity. Well, you've been there too. I mean, endless opportunities to believe your press, which then ultimately changes you. You're no longer, you're now being, you're not authentic at this point. Because if you believe what if you're hearing what you want to hear, and you're believing it. So.
It's also now.
That's right, I am this. Oh, this is what I am. Because none of us really knows what we am. Because it's not knowable, actually. That's right. So, this has been an issue for me. I mean, I think for myself, when I was younger, and I had an eating disorder. So, here's what I was going to do. Nobody was going to know. And the longer that went on, the less authentic I was, because I was putting on this person who was successful or looked pretty happy. But I knew I was fundamentally bullshitting. I was fundamentally lying in my involvement with people because I wasn't committed to being completely there. It was too frightening. And I think we all harbor little corners of ourselves where we're trying to shortcut, or nobody knows if I didn't dust underneath the bed. That's so meager, right? But we can get really good with that. You know, we can even do things like embezzle lots of money as long as nobody knows we're good. So, and it can't, it eventually, it will, it's as though we're eating ourselves from the inside out. So, this is really important. This is really important work because it's just between you and you. And it requires you to be us, to be ferocious, actually, at knowing where we're BSing. And yet not be vicious to ourselves. It's not about I'm the only person who is really messed up here. We're all carrying around our little secrets. And they're not all bad. I mean, listen, I can get carried away with Law and Order afternoons. Whole afternoons can go by. And it's not a crime. But there's some kind of, at least I have to be honest with myself. And no, I'm not. What am I doing with this, actually? So,
I'm just wondering about another way that I've been thinking about this slogan. I find this very helpful because it clarifies a little bit. But the way I've been thinking of it, of the two witnesses hold the principal one, that each of us know what's best for ourselves in terms of our own path. Now, maybe that's not what it really means. You know, in other words, when people are trying to decide, should I do this program or that program, and they ask for advice, I mean, someone who's maybe more familiar with those teachings might steer them one way or the other. But in the end, doesn't the student make their own choice?
Has to. Of course.
Is that what this means?
I think,
or not?
Of course. But also, there's different degrees of surrender, right? So if I ask you, what do you think about this program? Or what do you think about this teacher? And you say, well, I thought he was kind of an idiot. Well, you know, and then I'm well, I kind of like him. What's wrong with me? You know, then I'm giving you sort of
the answer.
Yeah, that's the whole thing, the answer. That's exactly right.
I mean, and so really, I mean, I think it's always back to having confidence in yourself.
But there are periods when we have no confidence in ourselves.
And we don't know.
And we don't know.
We really don't know because we're not experienced enough. So we need to rely on other
teachers. We need teachers.
Right. We need teachers, but we also have to know. We also have to feel inside ourselves what is
exactly
best for us.
Because a teacher can tell you something that you go like, what? And then your options are, you can go, well, I'm just kind of, you know, I don't know anything. And this teacher's
I'm a lowly student.
Yeah, I'm a lowly student. This teacher's so brilliant. And
but it doesn't really matter because, you know, the difficulty is believing you're going to surrender yourself to a higher good by doing something that you believe, that you accept is basically this notion of transcending yourself by doing what somebody else tells you.
No.
And it's like an authority figure. So the difficulty of this is authority and how we really view authority. In other words, are we going to transfer our notion of authority onto somebody else? So a guru, if the guru is really the guru, then they are speaking from inside you. It's not like you're being told from the outside.
Well, yes.
And in other words, there has to be a resonance that you relate to in yourself already. If it's not that, if you're trying to be somebody else, like become somebody else, you're becoming somebody else who is now the version of this person who's telling you what you should be. That is a complete abandonment from your own basic truth. We are always have to be in the center of our world. We are whether we like it or not. And when we begin to put somebody else in that place, we are really in serious trouble. This is one of the problems about getting into guru business.
Well, I'm glad you say that because that's, in fact, one of the reasons I wanted to work with this slogan. It's because that whole, it's very risky. that whole paradigm of being a student and having a guru or a teacher. It can be very, very risky.
Well, the only way I can understand this, and the only way it can make sense to me, is when you sense an inseparability between yourself and the guru, that you and the guru are basically of one nature. And if you can't really take that position for yourself, then you shouldn't be involved.
So how do you know that at the very beginning of your journey?
Well, you don't start at that beginning of your journey with a guru, first of all. So first of all, in terms of starting on the journey, we're studying Dharma.
We're viewing teachers as basically
examples of good behavior and of sanity. So we look at them with as a degree of, you know, they illustrate a sense of guidance for us that we can really look up to. But that's not the same thing as relating to somebody who's telling you what to do. In other words, you still have to make your own decisions. When you get into this thing, because guru only really applies to the Hidden Vajrayana, it does not apply in terms of everything we are studying in this course, by the way. Nobody here in this
class... Wait.
Let me just say this.
Well,
okay, let me finish, and you can say what you want. We are studying a level of Dharma that requires a guru. That's just the simple truth. So the whole question of a guru is only when you become a Vajrayana student.
I don't not necessarily agree with you, and I'll tell you why after Michael says what
right.
he wants to say.
Because we're dealing with what's happening here in this room rather than something that someone keeps talking to us about. And that's why people in this room have to respond as they can rather than being told something like that.
So, for those of you who don't know me, there are more tools about Lojong. There are tools of Lojong cards that have, and I pull one every morning and say, okay, so what do I have to work with today? And it's interesting. I think it was this morning or yesterday morning, I pulled Don't Transfer the Ox's Load to the Cow.
That's so great.
Which, in some ways, I mean, all of these slogans do kind of talk to each other, because it really is asking for us to think and slow down and consider deeply how we move through the world, how we hear and speak and think through the world. And in some ways, as we're busy talking about this slogan of the two principles hold, of the two witnesses hold the principal one, that it feels almost like the same thing, which is the opportunity to always stop and consider and look inside. You know? And I feel like part of, at least for me, part of my path is really trying to understand two things. One is that myself and everyone else, we are ultimately one. And at the same time, I'm in this form, in this, you know, in this parallel universe right now with all of you, or so I think. And that I need to also have us. It's the ego sense of fearing that somehow I am separate, and there's this hunger to need to not be separate, if that makes any sense to anybody. And so that this of the two witnesses hold the principal one feels like a real opportunity for me to both sit with the discomfort of knowing that I am interconnected with everyone else, and at the same time I need to key in to where I'm at any point in time with that in mind, if that makes any sense.
I think that's exactly on target. Because it's not telling you to... That's why the word judge is really... I find it a little aggressive, actually.
Judgy.
Yeah, that's a bit judgy, right.
Although I think he's also just talking about making judgments, about making decisions.
Right, yeah,
you
of
know,
course.
So judging a situation for oneself as to what I need to understand or determine about situation. I don't think he's necessarily only speaking in terms
of course.
Condemnation.
But, you know, I have a tendency, say, to be heavy-handed with my judginess of myself. And again, I'm the only one here who can see that, I'm sure. But at any rate, yeah, of course you're right. But that there is a tendency when you're frightened or feeling lost or groundless to really want to grasp. Really want to believe that somebody else knows what you should be doing or what's the best thing for you. And there's a tendency in any organization to get heavy-handed about that. And that people can appear to know, but they're very committed to telling you what you should be doing. And and I think this is telling us, wait a minute, you actually start knowing yourself. And that word, your true nature, I've always had such a problem with that phrase, but I think this really is the sense of, like, I actually know. If I look at it, I can actually see what my real tenant feeling is going.
I like the word witness, because witness, there's a quality of being present with and seeing, like looking in, witnessing, seeing what's out, but also seeing what's in. It seems to go both ways.
Yeah.
To me, it's a better word. It resonates more with me.
It's also more neutral than judging.
Yeah.
Because it's just observing.
Mm. Right.
Looking at it. It's being there with it.
Uh-huh. Right. Less critical.
Rather than...
So,
whether it's good or bad.
Yeah. On the back is Judy Leaf's assessment of this. Would you like to read that?
Yeah.
Anybody?
I'll read it. You read. Of the two witnesses, hold the principle one, the slogan 20. This slogan is about aloneness and confidence. It gets to a core issue on the path of practice, which is the fact that each of us must travel it alone and by ourselves. Of course, we may be in a community or a sangha, but within a sangha of 100 members, there are 100 different paths. We may be in one tradition, but the way we each go about it is unique. Life altogether has that same quality. We come in alone, we go out alone, and in between, no matter how many friends and acquaintances we may have, we are still alone at a fundamental level. It is hard to accept this kind of existential aloneness in ourselves or in others. We want people to really know us, and we want to have some way of truly understanding others. But no matter how much we bare our hearts, we can never convey the fullness of our experiential reality. And no matter how much we probe, we can never fully penetrate another person's experience. According to this slogan, if we want feedback as to how we are doing, we must rely on our own judgment. But it is unsettling to realize that no one else really knows what is going on with us. So we look around for confirmation. We look to others for feedback and to find clues as to how we are doing from others. Instead of looking directly at our own experience, we try to find it in what is reflected back to us from outside. But that reflection is not all that trustworthy. People are easily fooled by appearances and judge what is going on according to their own biases and preconceptions. It is easy to become so used to looking for the approval of others that we lose confidence in our own self-knowledge. But according to this slogan, we must learn to trust what we know and not rely so heavily on others. Only we really know when we are being phony or genuine, aware or unaware, compassionate or uncompassionate. No matter what may be going on at the surface and how confused we may feel, deep down we know exactly what is going on and what we are up to. That is the witness we must hold.
So, at the bottom of that is this sort of an assignment, a little assignment, which is to pay attention to the loneliness of experience. Note the difference between seeking for confirmation and direct witnessing. What makes you trust or distrust your own experience? And below that, I just loved that Pema said this, so work with seeing yourself with compassion, but without any self-deception. And I think both are rely on each other, sort of like having the foundation of a house. It's strong. There's no self-deception. And then you can have curlicues and do all sorts of stuff. But on your windows and your woodwork and so on. But the house is steady and true because you're not... there's no deception, self-deception. So I think that this practice is actually... this is a lifelong practice. Pay attention to the loneliness of experience. Isn't it?
The first time we went over these Lojong things a couple of years ago, I was so discouraged. It was all so negative, and we used Traleg's book, and I thought, oh my God, it used to be 10 commandments. Now it's 58 slogans. There's no way I can do this. And I sort of chucked the whole thing and said, this is just impossible. And then when we started to do it this time, the subtitles of the book were like, the Lojong things for developing compassion. And I'm, oh, okay. And then somebody else's subtitle is for developing loving kindness. And I'm, okay, this has got a better purpose to it. But what you just said, Erica, about actually looking at myself and, not throwing up is really hard to do.
Yeah.
It's just, is to have compassion. The flaws are so enormous. Yeah. It's just, I still do not know how to, have any idea how to do that.
What I find so remarkable about Lojong is how it flips everything upside down. And I don't know what made me think of this the other day, but there's a person at pickleball, this woman, who's just... I felt she was so mean. She would never look at me or never say hello, and she was one of the stars, and she would only
pickleball star.
And I had this attitude about her, and then I realized, I don't know what happened today, but I actually practiced, and I was just applying compassion, I was visualizing her and trying to see things from her point of view. Like, why would she want to play with some new person who was boring and couldn't play very well? And then today, because there weren't that many, you know, it just the mix was very different. And I ended up playing with her, and all of a sudden, the whole thing shifted. Mm-hmm. And she was not at all the way I thought she was. It just changed. And I'm thinking, was it because I was more compassionate in my mind ahead of time, or it just happened? But it's so interesting. I think we don't give enough credit to the point that these words on the page actually can transform our lives. That it's not just words on the page, yeah. But it's an inner process, and they're pointing the way. They aren't the answer, but they actually point us in the direction of how we can begin the transformation by working with our view and working on ourselves.
In your real life.
Yeah.
Not just when you're on the cushion processing stuff.
Right.
And that's where the real work gets done, right? In the pickleball court.
In the pickleball court. Now, all of a sudden, I like her, you know, and I think, you know, for months, my attitude was, she's the meanest person I ever met. Goodness. Yeah. I mean, it's remarkable. What's pickleball? I'll tell you later.
It's the best phrase. Just listen to you say those words. Pickleball makes me happy.
it's the latest sport. They got here pretty late because it started in Seattle like in the 80s or something. You know, things take a long time to get to the East Coast.
What do you, do you have some experience of today?
With the reading?
No. I haven't heard from you at all. I'm just wondering what's happening with you.
Well, I'm not sure what I'm doing exactly.
Yay!
I feel like I need some direction, some guidance.
Yeah.
Just to try to do. I know we're not anal about being doing it properly, but there must be some kind of guidelines, I guess.
Have you met with a man?
My mind was like wandering a lot more than usual, like thinking about people. Situations and much more than usual time.
Would it help you? I mean, would you be interested in meeting with a teacher, a one-on-one, or because our teachers offer that? But I don't know.
Yeah, I'd be interested in that. And my work schedule's changed, so I'm not gonna be able to come. So I want to find out as much information as I can, how I can stay connected. I'm trying to learn as much as I can.
Did you get meditation instruction tonight? Did you get instruction in how to meditate?
You mean beforehand?
Oh, you came. You came
yeah,
last week.
Last week.
Oh, I didn't know you were here.
Right. I mean, I feel like I need to know more than just one session.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
I think I would recommend people get this book, the Chögyam Trungpa book. That's another version of it. And it also, you can get slogan cards, which Megan mentioned. And I think what you're doing is just sort of say, what is pull one out a day is really the way to do it. It's also... It makes it less of a big deal. It's just like part of your life. So it's like this heavy, important, meditative thing I'm doing. It's just working with how this material bubbles up in your daily life, which is your school. Our daily life is the...
Where it happens.
Erica, where do you find the Judy Lee commentaries on the slogan?
I used the Google.
Oh, okay.
And I kept digging in. And
yeah, I mean, but it's not in a book form.
I didn't see it in a book form. I think it could have been an article from a magazine.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'll see if I can find it further. But, I thought it was wonderful.
I also think that the subtlety of how, like, I notice this when I feel like I'm opening inwardly and getting flooded. I allow myself to get flooded by others. That's part of my stuff. I need to work on others' needs or expectations or whatever. And what I find working with the Lojong, as others have said, is that it comes in waves. Like, it keeps on changing as I continue to change.
Yeah.
And that I can look at something with curiosity and interest in the spirit of witness as opposed to judgment.
Yeah, rather than being heavy-handed or something.
Yeah, that it truly is about compassion, ultimately. Mm-hmm. It's a very interesting thing, right, with this structure, which is Lojong, but you force yourself to go into the structure, which is Lojong, and as a result, there's this soft, fluffy place called compassion that ultimately you seek to find, because if you were to, as you said, be in the trenches with this whipping yourself, then ultimately you hopefully get sick and tired of it enough that you need to let that go.
There you go.
Did you hear that?
Oh, I hear that.
I've got a collection of whips.
Sorry, wait. Let's hear Muffy. What did you say?
I was just saying if it was really like that, if it was really like you're whipping yourself with it and it's like this grinding thing you've got to do every day, you'd stop doing it.
That's right.
I mean, you wouldn't be pulling those cards out and you wouldn't find the joy that you find in each card every day.
Well, but how do you change that, though?
Well, that's the thing. I mean, I think change is... the goal is to first witness and try to be with, you know? Be with the discomfort of, like, ugh, that's what's going on inside of me right now. That's what I really want to do or say. And it feels very uncomfortable because it's the feelings about the feelings that really get us into trouble. So I feel like it's more about just like the way you sit and meditate and try to, like what you just did, you did a courageous thing, like you sat through the whole hour, right, and there was discomfort. As you said, my thoughts were running wild. Welcome to the rest of the club. But the fact that you can sit through that proves that there is a great well of compassion that is welcoming you, if you will. And I think it's not what you think. Taking action, here I am, what am I saying? But it's not what you think. Taking action isn't necessarily what you think it is. Sometimes it's just witnessing and practicing being in that uncomfortable place and learning how to really love.
And you really brought up a good point. We are not what we think we are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's one of the important things about learning about ourselves through meditation. We don't believe our thoughts.
Yeah, we're not supposed to believe what we think.
And another way to regard yourself with, like, if you looked at somebody else who was going through what you go through, would you be all hateful towards them? Or would you feel your heart wanting to help them or wanting to be, you know, you'd feel compassionate towards them. So give yourself that as well. You deserve that too.
Well, I think it's easier for me to do with other people.
Of course it is. It is for all of us.
So I'd like to tell you my favorite bumper sticker.
Okay.
Which is, you don't have to believe everything you think.
Right, yeah. And on that note, the time is nigh.